Greetings, everyone, and welcome to episode number 29 of Real Blend, a podcast that spent the day hanging out with Tom Cruise. Woo! My name is Sean O'Connell. I'm the managing editor here of Cinema Blend, and we are in Paris, France, recording a very special international edition of the podcast. Joining me, as always, is my great friend Jake Hamilton of Fox 32 in Chicago. Jake, how are you, sir?
I'm doing damn well, sir. How are you?
I'm great. Are you best friends with Tom Cruise?
I am best friends. You mean Thomas of House Cruise?
I think I might also be best friends with Tom Cruise.
I think we are.
Well, sitting in our third chair today is Tom Cruise's third best friend, an outstanding colleague of ours who we are thrilled to have on the podcast, Chris Van Vliet, who is the entertainment reporter for Deco Drive.
Welcome, sir. Welcome.
Thank you. I will do my best to be as enthusiastic as Kevin is.
Yeah, because you're replacing Kevin. So you just have to say the word awesome a lot and talk about what scenes look like behind the scenes.
Of course. Yeah. Okay. Well, I've been practicing all week for this.
We are in Paris for the world premiere of Mission Impossible Fallout, which we saw a couple of days ago. And over the course of our time here, we've been interviewing the cast. And today we did the red carpet with Tom Cruise. So we are going to get into some of our stories from the junket. We're going to give reactions to the movie, but we won't do spoilers. We're just going to sort of give, I think we'll give star ratings maybe, we'll talk a bit about where it falls. Do we want to rank them today?
I'd love to.
Are we thinking about doing that? Okay, so we're thinking about doing that. So do us a favor. I want you guys to do us a real big favor and help Chris out. Go to Chris Van Vliet's YouTube channel. Subscribe today. He's aiming to get a plaque. What is this plaque that you're trying to get?
It's really cool.
This is very kind of you. Thank you. I'm very close to 100,000 subscribers on YouTube. When you get the 100,000 subscribers, YouTube sends you the silver play button, which is this incredible, beautiful work of art, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's a silver play button.
Nice.
But I'm at like 97,000
subscribers. Might I argue that you should subscribe? Yes, because you'll put him one person closer to the silver plate button. Sure. But he also does great interviews for a variety of film and wrestling and music and whatever the case may be. He just recently did an interview with Donald Glover. They got nearly 7 million views.
That was a good one.
Benefit that you get is that you get some truly great interviews that I would put in the tier of or at least the style of the quality of what you or I or Kevin do.
I would agree.
100%. Wow, I get to be in the same class as you guys.
That's why you're here.
That's
why you're in the chair. Do us a favor as well. When you're online, subscribe to Real Blend at Real Blend on Twitter. We picked up a number of subscribers. Go to iTunes, subscribe to us, leave us a star rating, and leave us a review, because we have said that if you leave us a review, we're going to read them at the top of the show, and we got a new one last week, so I want to read that. I want to read this new one that we have. This is from Ted W. Meyer.
Ted.
Who follows us on social media, is a great interactor with us on Twitter. Really funny guy.
He's probably friends with Tom Cruise, too.
Probably.
I wonder if he is. Yeah. We'll ask him that on social media. He's actually best friends with Tom Cruise. He says, this is his review: if you're looking for knowledgeable and lively commentary on new movies and movie news, this is where you want to be. Have enjoyed this a great deal from the Awards Blend days. So he's going all the way back to the beginning of this podcast. The three hosts have great chemistry, and I love hearing the junket stories. Well, brother.
Hey, we got some junket stories today.
Some good ones. Yeah. Tons of enthusiasm and knowledge, and their best of blend games are really fun and a good way to not exclusively talk about whatever movie just came out. They're very opinionated, but also very positive, never insulting these filmmakers or actors as people. Also, all three of them are great fun on Twitter. I wish this program only 5-star ratings and gazillions of downloads. Ted Meyer.
Hey. Awesome. Well done, sir. Awesome. Thank you.
Nice review.
Your check's in the mail, sir.
Yeah, how much did you pay Ted for that? Yeah.
Ted is actually Jake's mom. She has a million aliases.
Aren't you sort of glad that, like, this so for people that don't know, a lot of people follow this live on Facebook, and we do a video so we can chat.
Yes.
I'm sort of glad this is the one episode where we're not, because
we're drinking.
For people that, but I was going to say, people that can't see us, Chris Van Vliet looks like Henry Cavill.
Yes.
So if there were going to be one episode where I weren't on video sitting next to someone, I would want it to be the one where I'm sitting next to the guy that looks like Henry Cavill. So I'm very glad that no one can see you, Chris. And they can only hear the melodious timbre of your voice.
Thank you.
Just went all the way up.
We start with news, as we normally do, and we have a lot of news to get to, including at the request of, and I want to mention later, the blend game this week is going to be hashtag Paris Blend, where we are going to pick a movie that we think was is significant to Paris because it was either filmed here, there's a significant scene that takes place here, it's about Paris, it reminds you of Paris. The parameters for this week's game are pretty fluid, but I think we can still have some fun with it. And we have some pretty good recommendations from everybody who played along at home. So I want to start with the casting of Joaquin Phoenix officially playing the Joker. And this opens up a lot of doors for possibilities. Someone even said today on the bus over to the red carpet, this would be a great movie for them to launch the new Batman. Like, the, whoever's going to play Matt Reeves as Batman maybe should get introduced in this movie. I don't know how this movie fits into the other movies that exist, but what do you guys think of the casting, and what do you think of this, these one-offs that DC is going to try to do to maybe not be as connected as Marvel is?
What's going to happen to Jared Leto now is the, is a huge question that no one's addressing.
Right.
And what happens to the idea that he was supposed to have a spin-off film that I guess is getting thrown away now?
I mean, DC has a habit of just announcing titles, right? Like, Margot Robbie's going to get a spin-off movie.
Yeah.
Maybe Birds of Prey or Gotham City Sirens. Jared Leto's going to get his own one, and now this one. If I'm Leto, I'm kind of annoyed by this because it's pulling the carpet out from underneath me, and I don't know how he reacts. Because they're saying that it's going to take place like in the DC universe, but I don't see how it connects. Like,
but this is, is this supposed to be an origin story?
Yeah.
I think that this is fantastic casting, and I think that it's going to be interesting to see exactly where this movie's set, but Joaquin Phoenix is one of those guys that completely loses himself in a character.
Right.
Jared Leto tried to do that. He just was in a really not very good movie in Suicide Squad.
Yeah, I didn't like his interpretation at all.
And you're with a lot of people
yeah.
who didn't like that interpretation.
For me, though, it's less about the casting because I believe in Joaquin Phoenix and I think he can do just about anything. And more about the fact that I don't want a Joker origin story.
Yeah.
I don't want to know where the Joker came from.
Right.
For me, the appeal of the Joker is that, this was exemplified in Nolan's film, that he had a different story for every person he talked to. And you're sitting there and you're wondering, like, how did this person get to this place? There's no way that the answer to that is going to be better than the question.
I think in the comics, he also has, like, a million different origins because he never really wants to tell people officially
I don't want to see that. Right. Like, if it were, hey, he's going to play the Joker in a movie in which when it starts out he's already the Joker, cool, I'm all for it.
Right.
I don't need to see, you know, John Smith turn into the Joker.
Because otherwise it just feels like an inevitability of a movie, right?
Yeah.
You're getting introduced to him as a normal person, and we're just sitting around waiting for, okay, well, what's going to push him over the
edge? Takes away the mystery.
There are so many great villains, though, in Gotham, in the Batman world.
Sure.
Why do we keep going back to the Joker every single time?
Yeah.
Especially, he is fascinating, I get that, but...
Especially when Ledger won an Oscar. Won an Oscar for playing the Joker.
Yeah.
And now we're going to just, you know... 10 years later, well, it'll
do it again. Well, that maybe that's why.
10 years later, do it again, and then again, again.
Yeah.
I love the casting, and I'm a little concerned about Todd Phillips. Like, it's Todd Phillips who has this idea. And I think Todd Phillips is a good filmmaker. I just would never pigeonhole him from a Joker
movie. But he's got a darkness to him, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like even when you watch the Hangover movies, all of the Hangover movies have this aspect of, like, really... dark humor to them where like this guy's he's got something dark and deep inside of him and I think that's maybe what he could explore.
Oh, what about your boy Scorsese producing it? Like, what does that mean?
That's
first of all, I just love that you refer to him as my boy.
He is your boy.
My boy Scorsese.
Your boy.
But no, I mean, that's but these days, what does producing really mean?
Yeah,
like what is his, I mean, that could mean that he's going to slap his name on it and throw a few shekels its way, or is he going to be on set given Todd Phillips some pointers? Like, we never really know what the producing role means.
Right.
And I do think, like, if he really wanted to be involved in the project like this, Scorsese would have directed it.
And that was my argument, too.
Right?
If he wanted to do it, we would be saying, and then we'd be having a different conversation.
Completely.
Yeah, because if Martin Scorsese had a vision for a Joker origin story, one, those are all words I never thought I'd ever say in a sentence. But I would be down for it.
But if it is like this, you know, if it could have been a rise up from the criminal underworld, you know, in a Scorsese monster.
It's Goodfellas, but he just ends up as the Joker.
I'm on board with
that. I'm in.
And maybe that's what it is. Maybe Phillips pitched that idea to Scorsese and he was like, sure, I'll throw my name out.
I think what DC needs to do is base their stories more in reality. A la The Dark Knight and the whole series, because you know, these other movies they've been doing where your bad guy is someone who wouldn't exist on Earth. It just, it takes you so far out of it.
Right.
And that's where Marvel's doing so well here.
And that's why, as much as I love Man of Steel, it feels weird to have the Man of Steel and Batman on screen together, because Batman is so grounded, especially the Batman we've gotten over the last 10, 15 years has always been so grounded in reality, and Nolan made sure of that. And then by definition, Superman is not. Superman is an alien. Yeah. So it's just like, it just didn't feel, and it's just like, well, then how do we, it sort of feels like DC is just like throwing spaghetti against the wall, sort of seeing what sticks.
Right.
To your point, you said like, oh, they announced a bunch of movies, and I feel like they wait to see what our reaction is.
Yeah.
And if no one reacts, like, oh, forget it, we'll go on to the next one.
Yeah, no, it happens all the time. This next story is something that I thought sort of originated as like a bit of a joke online, mm-hmm. of Billy Dee Williams returning to play Lando. And it was always like, well, is he going to? And he's the last character of the major characters to bring back.
Yeah.
And there's all the one. Now it's been confirmed that he's coming back and playing Lando, which I also found pretty interesting, too, because when Solo came out, there was we asked on Cinema Blend to Donald Glover, do you think that Lando should get the ship back eventually? And he said, no, it's not my ship. I don't think it's Lando's ship anymore.
Yeah. Interesting.
It's Han's
That's
ship.
A good question.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So why? I guess I'm going to have to, I'll ask, why are they bringing him back? Like, is it fan service?
Yes.
To give him one more shot?
Yeah, it's absolutely.
For sure.
Yeah. Okay, so you don't think there's like a relevant story point that you need to know?
No, and if Donald Glover hadn't been so popular as Lando in a movie that wasn't received that well in Solo, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now.
Okay. And also, I mean, so we were at the premiere of the movie, and we saw him there. We saw Billy Dee Williams. Mm-hmm. And he's still getting around. He's a sharp guy, but he's getting around on a cane. Like, he can't...
Right.
I don't think... He's not going to be the Lando that's running around shooting blasters anymore.
What are you going to do with him, man?
For me, I always thought he should have been the guy that they went... And granted, I know now I'm playing Monday Morning Quarterback. He should have been the guy that they needed to find at Canto Bite in The Last Jedi.
Oh, that would have been great!
Running the casino... He should have been the guy, you know, he's got all the
yes!
you know, that's who they should have been
Why did
after.
They do that?
I don't know.
Why are you writing these films?
You know?
That would have been great.
So that's, in my mind, that's who it should have been. I don't think we're going to be seeing, and that's where I think fanboys need to check their expectations.
Right.
And the same way with Carrie Russell being cast,
mm-hmm.
she's probably not going to be Rey's mom.
Right.
So we all need to get off that. And the same way, like, we're not going to see Lando from Empire. We're going to see Lando how he looks now. And he's getting around on a cane. That just is the way it is.
I was surprised when I saw him on the red carpet.
Yeah.
And he just looked... I mean, obviously, all these guys are getting older. This speaks
to... Peter Mayhew is, like, in a wheelchair. I mean, that's just just is the way it is.
I know. Are you excited by the casting? Or the fact that he's coming back?
I think it's great that he's coming back. And, you know, you're bringing back all of these people from all of the Star Wars movies are finding their way back into the films in some way. I can't see this being more than like a scene or two, though.
Right.
Because of what you were just talking about, Jake. He's not like that mobile, and I can't see how he fits into the story either.
But they had to go back to the drawing board when they lost Carrie Fisher.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, he could end up playing a role in the story that she was...
Oh, that's a good point. That's a really good point.
I mean, maybe they lean on him for that.
Yeah. Do you think that the opening scroll begins with Princess Leia is dead?
I'm starting to think that.
Yeah.
Because... they've been saying they won't use CGI
yeah.
to bring her back, that it's not fair to her legacy.
Yeah.
But I forget what her family said, whether they were okay with it.
I feel like they said, or like at some point after Rogue One came out, that she said something about like, didn't she approve of that? Wasn't she pretty cool with it?
She was pretty cool with it, because
yeah.
they made her look like she did back in the 70s, and she looked fantastic.
Yeah, right.
But that technology's not there. It's not like you couldn't do it with a whole character. I thought Peter Mayhew didn't look great.
Oh, I disagree. I thought he looked fantastic.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
In fact, I saw the movie with my fiance, and when it was over, I leaned over and I said, "Did you know what he notice anything about that character?" And she goes, "No, what?" And I said, "He's been dead for the last 20 years." And
right.
She goes, "Wait, what are you talking about?" She had no idea.
Now, what do you think of the de-aging in Ant-Man? Michael Douglas and Michelle Pfeiffer.
That's not nearly near the top of that film's problems.
It's the same thing. It's the same issue.
it was weird seeing a young Michael. But what do they refer to it as? The uncanny valley, where it's this idea that like it just in your soul it doesn't feel natural.
Yeah, you're not.
We're still
person.
In that.
Yeah,
I think.
I understand. I want to get into some Lost talk. So Gabe is getting upset because we're going to shift into a TV show. But some of our readers wanted Jake to clarify a comment that you made last week when we mentioned Lost.
Yes.
Because I think we were doing a Breaking Bad segment. It was Breaking Bad's 10th anniversary.
Okay. Yeah.
So we're talking about how important that show was to us from a storytelling perspective. And then Kevin threw out a hand grenade as we were trying. Every time we try and move Kevin off of a topic.
Okay. Really quick.
Let me just say. Yeah. And then he goes into something else. And he says... Jake doesn't like the ending of Breaking Bad, and he thinks it's disappointing. Which we'll have to get into that conversation another time, too. But then I was shocked because I think the ending of Lost is disappointing, and Jake thinks it's misunderstood. And so people wanted you to clarify.
Yeah, I mean, and I say this in the sense that a lot of people come to me and they're like,
giving you 1 minute, go.
Didn't you hate the ending because they were dead the whole time? It's, no, it's not that they were dead the whole time. If you watch the final season, which was the sixth season, there was what they referred to as a flash sideways. The whole show, they either flash back in the storyline or they flash forward from the time on the island. The flash sideways was, as it was revealed, at some point, as we all do, the characters in the show died. And they went to a purgatory of sorts, but they could not move on to heaven together,
right,
or whatever the afterlife was, until they were all there, until everyone had died, because they were the most important people in each other's lives.
Right.
So the flash sideways was this purgatory of sorts in which they were sort of drawn together and sort of forced to find each other, and they all met in a church. They all met in a church that had multiple religious symbols all over it, so it was not denominational, and you could sort of interpret it in any religious way in which you... And at that point, Jack meets his father and says, like, have I been dead? Or, like, was I dead the whole time? And he says, no, what happened, happened.
Right.
But everyone dies.
Yeah.
Everyone does. But you're all the most important, and you could not move on to that next step unless you were all together. So the series ends with them all in this church-like place,
right,
walking out a door into the light. It's not that they were dead the whole time. It's that they, are, in fact, were alive together the whole time. The biggest mistake the show made was that if you are familiar with watching a show on ABC, the credits usually coincide with a preview for whatever's coming up next.
Sure.
They did not want to ruin that by putting a preview for, like, coming up on the 9 o'clock news as, like, you're trying to experience what you just had.
Sure.
So they just put calming video of waves crashing against the beach,
okay,
to kind of let you breathe for a second. Fans interpreted that as, oh, that's just the, and it showed the plane wreckage.
Yeah. Well, didn't Jack lay down? Doesn't it end with him laying down?
Yes.
And it zooms in on his
it
eye.
It zooms on his eye, and his eye closes, which,
right,
is the exact opposite of what the opening scene of the show was.
Right.
His eyes open.
That.
So that's him dying on the island.
Yeah, yeah.
And then before he dies, he sees a plane flying over.
Yeah,
that's
right.
His friends. But they went on to leave lives.
Okay.
And they eventually died.
Right.
We have no idea how long this purgatory lasted. In fact, there's one character that who was invited into the church, and he says, no, I still have some stuff I need to figure out.
Okay.
Because he was sort of the bad character. So I just think that whenever people tell me, like, oh, I didn't like it because they were dead the whole time, like, no, they weren't. And I've heard that enough where I'm starting to think that that's the general consensus.
Did you watch it, Chris? Were you a Lost guy?
Spoiler alert!
I've never seen a single episode of Lost.
Okay.
I thought we were going to talk about movies here.
We're getting there.
It's the most cinematic television show of all time, sir. J.J. Abrams directed the pilot episode. It's one of the greatest and most expensive pilots
of
all time.
It is a great pilot episode.
And in fact,
and the show is great.
Do you know what it's called?
No.
It's called Pilot.
Is it
because
really?
Who are they going to look for?
The pilot. Yeah. It's great. It's a really good... Well, the pilot episode is fantastic. The show in general is really great.
Well, yeah,
the twist when they when Jack says we have to go back,
yeah,
and you realize,
which
that
is one of the all-time great TV twists of
tremendous,
all time.
Tremendous. And I'm with you on the ending. I think ending any of those shows,
yeah,
is really difficult,
yeah,
and that's why I think you find Breaking Bad unsatisfying,
yeah,
is because they're never going to deliver something that's totally great for everybody.
Yeah.
I think the Sopranos ending is genius.
Yeah,
honestly,
yeah,
and I understand why people
we need to do an episode on finales.
On finales. We could probably get to that point. So let us know if you agree with the Lost conversation and if you think that it's as,
yeah,
misunderstood.
Also, Michael Giacchino's score, that's one of his most beautiful pieces of that score when Jack dies.
Well, and who plays John Locke? What's that guy?
Oh, Terry O'Quinn.
He's amazing.
He's fantastic. I think he won 2 Emmys for the show.
Deserve it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that was a great question that Kevin asked Evangeline Lilly. Do you have nicknames?
And she said Foxy for Matthew Fox.
Foxy for,
yeah,
Matthew Fox.
That's a great question.
Did.
Coming
Lost
from, there's the scene in Ant-Man where he refers to Captain America as Cap, and she goes, really? Like, you're friends with him? You can call him Cap?
Yeah.
And Kevin asked a great question, which is, like, what is a nickname that you have for a celebrity? And she says she called Matthew Fox Foxy.
Foxy.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah,
they did 7,
yeah,
years on that,
yeah,
show.
Most,
yeah,
people don't know I call you Pookie.
Thank you very much.
Oh, and what did we call Jake?
What do you call him? Hambone?
Jake Hammertown.
Hambertown.
Hamilton? Hammertown?
All right, we're going to skip to Mission Impossible, and I want to use that as a transition because they made Henry Cavill on the red carpet in front of everybody do his arm
and he
loading.
Hated it so much.
I wanted you guys to be able to see, everyone listening, how uncomfortable Henry Cavill is with the idea that his arm cranking, his arm loading.
And as the guy that asked him about it yesterday, I immediately went, oh no.
He doesn't like it.
I
no,
asked
he
him about
loves
him.
It.
He looks
so
miserable in that moment.
He brought,
dude,
it up out of nowhere in my interview.
We have to explain to people what,
yes,
we're talking
so
about.
So there's a scene in the new Mission Impossible. We're going to talk about the movie, and we're going to talk about the junket. But I want to let everybody know we're not going to do spoilers. This is something you can continue to listen to because we know it's 2 weeks until the movie comes out. There's a scene in the movie that's in the trailers. It's the bathroom fight, and Henry Cavill is fighting with Tom Cruise against another person, and he does an arm shake. It doesn't work in an audio. But it looks like he's loading his arms like you would a shotgun.
And not just that. Have you seen the GIF?
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. The GIF turned it into something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because in the context of the scene, it's nothing.
Yeah.
In the trailer, they like add like a gun cocking sound to it.
And his beard grows.
And his beard grows.
Somehow his beard
Which
grows.
I asked him if it, I was like, is that because like you stepped into lighting? He goes, no, I can grow a beard like that.
Can you do
it? And in my head, now I'm regretting, I should have said, well, why didn't you do that for Justice League?
Always let Chris do Henry Cavill because he does an amazing Henry
Cavill. I can just grow a beard like that. That wasn't even good.
It's pretty
good. That was not good at all. Henry Cavill actually lives 5 minutes away from me in Fort Lauderdale.
This is really, tell that story about you recognizing him.
Yes, so I saw him on the street. Los Solos, like the main strip in Fort Lauderdale. And I was walking out of a bar or a restaurant and he was walking in. With like a hat down low over his face. And I mean, think about this. He lives in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, places.
But you said that's fairly close to an area in which a lot of celebrities live.
I mean, he could, in Miami, I guess. It's like maybe half an hour from Miami. But it's a strange, don't you think it's a strange place for
when you told me that, I was like,
English
are you
actor?
Sure it was him?
Right.
Oh, it was him.
Yeah.
And then
he's a hulking man. Like, how do you miss him?
Yeah. He's
gigantic.
Yeah. He's exceptionally large.
He does not blend in.
As you said today, he had a double-breasted suit and was, like, barely fitting into it. And you're like, it's really hard for someone to fill in a double-breasted suit.
Yeah.
Like,
but
he's
did.
He's just a towering guy.
And I said to him, I said, I saw you walking out as I was walking in. But I didn't want to be like, hey, everybody, it's Superman. And he's like, oh, God, thank you so much for not doing that. But the last time a friend of mine had seen him out in Fort Lauderdale, and I talked to him for Justice League, and I said, hey, so a friend of mine saw you in Fort Lauderdale like 2 months ago. He's like, nope, I wasn't there. I'm like, then it was 3 months ago. Nope, wasn't there. I'm like, okay, I don't know. It was 3.5, 4 months ago, something like that. Yeah. But it was clearly you. Like, he was being very like secretive about the fact.
Like, I'm not going to mistake someone for Superman.
Right. Oh, if he had his glasses on, though.
Well played.
This is what Chris said he needs to do, is bring a pair of Clark Kent glasses and do this bit where he sits across from him and says, look, in case you're getting recognized by people in Fort Lauderdale, I brought these
for you. You should have done that.
Totally
doing the next time.
It would be so great.
What's the next thing he's doing?
He has a movie coming out later this year.
Oh, wow.
He has a beard for this film, which is why he has a mustache in Mission Impossible.
Really?
Yes, he was telling me about this.
So the mustache had nothing to do with Walker, the character he plays in Mission Impossible?
No, he said he came to the set with a beard and told Christopher McQuarrie, the director, that he had a vision that this character in Mission Impossible would have some sort of facial hair.
Yeah.
And McQuarrie's like, yeah, basically do whatever you want.
Right.
And then he grew that mustache with a little bit of stubble. You know, much to the disappointment of Warner Brothers, I'm sure.
Yeah.
All right, well, wait, I want to get to that. So we're in Paris, and the way that this happens is, more often than not, we fly to New York or L.A. to sit down with the cast. But every once in a while, and especially on the Mission films, they do something out of the ordinary where we go to a really unique city. For Rogue Nation, it was Vienna, because of the scene at the Vienna Opera House, and we were on in front of the Opera House as a setup for the red carpet. Today, we had a backdrop. I'm not even sure the name of the building where we were, but our backdrop was essentially the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah.
And it was like the most jaw-dropping view of the Eiffel Tower. Like, we were spoiled by the fact that standing on the carpet and looking straight ahead of us, we had this spectacular,
unblemished
view.
If the premiere wasn't there, that area would be flooded with tourists.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I would imagine. Yeah. So, and then the day before, we did interviews in the hotel, and so we got to sit down with the full cast, but we didn't get Tom until we got to the red carpet. And you asked a great question of Cavill, which was, what was the conversation with Warner Brothers about the mustache?
Oh, yeah.
What'd they say?
And I said, you know, did Warner Brothers say to you, like, you could just shave it off for a day to shoot the reshoots? And he said those actual words were spoken to me.
That's awesome.
That they thought that I could just shave it off and then grow back a mustache the next day.
Right.
Although if he cocked his arms enough, I suppose he could.
You know what's funny, though, is that because, and then Tom Cruise ends up injuring his foot and production has to shut down for a while.
Yes.
If they knew that was going to happen.
Because he probably didn't need more than 7 weeks for Justice League.
No, he just shot that horrible
based on the CGI, I feel like they didn't spend 7 weeks on it at all.
So we got to talk to the cast about different things that we learned over the course of shooting. And I want to go through really fast and just talk about star ratings for Fallout to get people excited for it. This is on a scale of 5. Chris, what would you give it?
5 being the best, of course. Yes. I would give this a 4.
Okay.
I think that the movie is all kinds of fun. It's everything you'd want in a summer blockbuster. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that Tom Cruise is human with the amount of stunts that he does in this movie. I mean, right. It's one after another, and they're all actually being done, which is so amazing.
Right.
I don't want to give away too many plot points here, but the movie itself is just incredibly entertaining, and it's everything you'd want from a mission film.
Jake, how many stars?
4.8.
Okay.
Wow. I put that in the context of like action films.
Yeah.
I don't put that, like, whenever I do these star ratings, it's not like, oh, I give Schindler's List 5 stars and I give Fallout 4.8, therefore I think Fallout is 0.2 less than Schindler's List. I do it in the realm of the genre which they exist.
Sure.
It's my favorite mission so far. I've slept on it. I think it is the most complete. Some of my, I just went back and rewatched all 5 of them before coming here. And one of my knocks for them is that, like, a lot of them sort of peak about 2/3 of the way through.
That is so true.
And then kind of limp to the end. Yeah. Like if I were to ask you about the ending of Ghost Protocol, most people would be like,
it was a car.
Yeah, 3 has a nice Shanghai, a great running scene.
But he's got the thing in his head, too.
Yeah.
Remember,
yeah.
He has to get that thing out of his
3's
head.
Three's a great... Yeah. I texted you after rewatching 3 saying 3 is much better than I thought. Yeah. Remembered it being.
Yeah.
These movies are so defined by what the big stunt was in each
exactly.
film.
If you're going to tell people, like, do you remember, like, part 2? You don't talk about the plot line. You say, oh, it's the one where he was hanging off the cliff.
Yeah.
Or it was the one where he held onto the plane. It was the one, it was the Burj Khalifa. Like, that's how you define the movies.
Yeah, and wait, here, I guess it's the Halo jump, but man, him hanging off the helicopter.
I see, for me, it's got to be the helicopter.
Because he not only does he hang off the helicopter, then he drives the helicopter and puts it in tailspins in real life.
Yeah, it's nuts. It's
so
nuts.
And there's a scene, to me, it's the motorcycle chase,
which is
wow.
Where the whole time I was flinching the whole time because I'm like, he's gonna die.
Yes.
And then we drove through that actual intersection today
in a giant bus.
Yeah.
and we
almost died there. Yes. Much less him on a motorcycle.
So there's some great scenes coming. So I put it at like 4. To me, it's like 4.25.
Why am I so low?
I don't know.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, you're fine.
Star ratings are always subjective.
I started, though.
I mean, if we've learned anything from Kevin, is that, like, sometimes his star rating, even though we might be a star off, we feel the exact same about the film.
Yeah.
So it is what it is.
And truthfully, what I said this to Paramount. I said, your problem is that 3, 4, and 5 are, like, all-timers.
Yeah.
Like, you're competing against 3 of the best action movies out there.
Right.
And so how are you going to top them?
Right.
It's really hard for you to do. I think Henry Cavill is a great addition. I really, really like him in this part. And I know there are a lot of people who are looking at him as an actor and saying, like, he's got to break out of the DC, you know, rut. It doesn't seem like that they're challenging him. And what is he going to do? And people really do like The Man from U.N.C.L.E. They like his part in it. And I think that this is going to sort of push him to another level where people start viewing him differently. The action set pieces, to me, are incredible. I think they're really great. And I think we can say this without any spoilers. This is the movie that solved the finale problem. Like, the third act
yes.
of this
oh,
movie...
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. Like, they saved the best for last.
Absolutely.
They do not limp intense. To the end.
The Burj Khalifa scene, no matter how many times I watch it, I get sweaty palms and goosebumps.
Yeah.
And I got that for the finale of this movie.
Yeah.
Like, the way that it's structured was fantastic.
Yeah, agreed.
So,
agreed.
Let's talk about getting a chance to be interviewed or to interview Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
It's not a normal thing to prepare for.
No.
At all. And what... So here's the situation with Cruise... In the fact that he doesn't do traditional junkets for you guys who are listening, he does a carpet. And so the day before, you sit down and get 4 to 5 minutes with the entire cast and the director. With Tom, you get him on the carpet and you get one question.
Yeah.
And today, it was a little bit more relaxed and everybody's maybe snuck in another one when they had the opportunity to. He was very talkative and really handled it well. But how do you guys feel about, and we were having this conversation on the carpet, like, is it easier to just prep one question, or do you really wish that you had the opportunity to do a traditional junket with him where you sit down and get...
Oh, I'd rather have more time.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Cast a wide net.
Yeah, for sure. Because if your one question, even if it's a great question,
right,
if it's not received well, or it's not about the question, it's about the answer, right?
Sure, yeah.
And if the answer you get isn't good, or yeah, it's too short, or he doesn't quite get where you're going with this, and that's it.
Yeah.
Well, you just flew all the way to Paris for that.
And that's a good point, because someone that was next to us was asking us, between these two questions, what should I ask?
Oh, yeah.
And one of them was a really good question, but I said, maybe not that one, because he's not going to, he might give, it's a great question and I want to hear his answer, but it's not going to elicit as long of an answer as the other one. And when you're only getting one question, you want as much time with him as possible.
Yeah.
And sometimes that means asking maybe more of a generic question, if only because you get to put your microphone in his face a little bit longer.
Well, let me ask each of you guys, because you're both getting material for television shows.
Yeah.
How much footage do you need to get out of it? Is it just a soundbite? Can you just do like Cruise on one day? Or
I mean, I can give Cruise a day. I'd like to be able to split him up into multiple hours.
Okay.
So that I don't want to repeat the same thing.
Okay.
So if I'm on in
but
six,
you're
seven,
different audiences.
Yeah, exactly. So, but if I'm on in 6, 7, 8, 9. Even getting two questions changes the game, because I can air the same bite in 6 and 8
right,
and 7 and 9,
okay,
and TV audiences aren't watching that long, and so every hour that the average person's tuning in, it's a different question.
What about Deco Drive?
For me, it's different. We're on a primetime show. It airs once. We're live at 7:30 at night. I'm actually going to make a package out of this, a segment out of this tomorrow morning.
Okay.
So it's going to be...
You're airing it already.
Yeah, yeah.
Will you re-air closer to the release date, or is this it?
This is it. It's
really?
Basically saying...
We were there.
The world premiere was in Paris last night. You know, Chris Van Vliet was there, and here's his interviews. And it's going to throw to me as if I was, you know, as if I'm live there. So we're going to be heavy on the Tom Cruise stuff, and then a bite from some of the other people about how, I mean, that backdrop was incredible.
I mean, it was,
and we are totally also skipping over the fact that Tom Cruise posed for photos with every single person he interviewed today.
Yeah.
Except, you know what? I forgot to ask him for one.
You did.
I totally forgot.
As soon as your interview was done, you just, thank you, and you walked away.
And I walked away. I was so caught up in the moment of like, this is Tom Cruise and now we're best friends, that I didn't ask for the posed photo. I'm so annoyed. So
for those watching, though, we did take, you do have photos with him.
Many of them.
You can
many
probably take a great screen grab of the...
Well, this is what we do, and we to let you guys know, like, we're just as big of fanboys.
Yes.
The fact
like,
that we're
we want
on the
pictures
carpet,
of these people, too.
I will put it at a rough estimate of like 50 times where we were just like, how did we get here? Like, why are we standing here? And look at this.
Yeah.
And when Tom Cruise was coming up the line and was like,
I was jumping, literally
way,
jumping up and down.
Yeah. Like, we spent 45 minutes of just being like, there's Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There's Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise is coming.
Yeah.
We're about to talk to Tom Cruise.
I can see him with my eyeballs.
But like, with general fan enthusiasm. Yeah. And then, so then, like, you're in the moment, right?
Yeah.
And you're like, and... So I led with a question that had a bit of a joke to the lead, and he was laughing at
I heard
the joke.
Him audibly laugh.
Yeah.
I heard him
he
laugh.
He was laughing. But in my brain, I'm thinking, stop laughing and listen to my question, because I need your answer to be good, right? I need this to work. And so there's so many things that you're dealing with in the moment, and then when you know you have a clock in the back of your head, and it's telling you you're done, and give it to the next person, and then we wrapped, and I moved on, and then he went to the next person. I was like, I didn't ask for my picture. I was so mad.
But
too many things.
All the elements together. It's Tom Cruise, who's incredibly present when he talks to you.
Yes.
You feel like there's no one else on the planet he'd rather be. Like, he looks in your eyes, and he gives you these answers like, he genuinely... wants to talk.
And this
to me.
Was Chris's guest. So let's mention that Van Vliet.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
We have to say this. Please. Yeah.
This was the top of my list. This was the one interview I'd never got.
Right.
I'm a huge wrestling fan, and for a long time it was The Rock, because
right.
I grew up watching The Rock and Stone Cold, and you know, they had these great feuds. Then I got The Rock in 2012.
Mm.
That was 6 years ago. So ever since then,
he's been your it.
Tom Cruise has been the
Hot
number
damn.
One guy.
That's awesome.
And now I'm best friends with him.
And not just like that, but you got him like in Paris.
Yeah,
and
the shadow of the Eiffel. Like, if
the
you
shot
get a chance,
is unbelievable.
Yeah, if you follow us on social media, and you should. You the picture, I mean, this idea that 2 hours ago we have a picture with Tom Cruise
right.
smiling into the camera with the Eiffel Tower in the background, like, that feels like something that should not have happened in our lives.
No. How many more of these can he do?
Of these movies?
How many more of these movies can he do?
Okay, here's the thing. I love them, I want to see more dramatic work from him.
Yeah, I
get that. Me too. My favorite work from Tom Cruise is Vanilla Sky, Magnolia,
Jerry Maguire. I love Vanilla Sky.
Like, well, he was on a real run there in the 90s, trying very hard to win an Oscar.
But then I feel like Last Samurai kind of backfired a little bit because he tried a little too hard to win an Oscar.
So
and then,
is that what happened? You think it's like he got tired of chasing these pedigree projects? And
now he's just making blockbusters.
Yeah, he's going from this to Top Gun 2.
I think he's going to be one of those guys that's going to end up winning an Oscar for a movie that we all say that's not the movie he should have won the Oscar for.
Which happens often.
It happens more often than you think.
Yeah.
Because he's circling Edge of Tomorrow 2, like a sequel to that. Yeah. And then he'll probably line up one more of these.
He's got to stop with the Jack Reachers, though.
Yeah.
No more Jack Reachers.
No, I know. I like the first one, but primarily because Macquarie did it. But the second one was
he's
not
gotta
good.
He's got to stop. Like,
I love those books. I read those books religiously. And
I've never read the books.
A, he's miscast. Like, Reacher is supposed to be 6'6", and a monster of a man, but I think Cruise is good in the movies.
No, he's always good. He's never bad, but, like, those are movies that I feel like Steven Seagal would have made in 1992.
The books are much better than that.
I can't think of his last great dramatic role.
Tropic Thunder.
He was great in Tropic Thunder.
Yeah, he was.
But was it Magnolia?
Man, that was...
Collateral.
Yeah, Collateral was, like... 14 years ago, I think.
All right,
we
played Cruise Blend already where we picked his best role. What do you think his best role is?
Ooh. Not best movie, his best performance.
His best performance.
Yeah. Magnolia.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Like, and that character was so on the other end of the spectrum of anything he's ever done before, and he nailed it.
He really did. I know. Yeah. He sort of threw his reputation to the wind.
What did you guys say, by the way?
I said Born on the 4th of July.
Okay.
I said Rain Man.
Okay, yeah. Kevin?
I love Rain Man. Kevin said...
What did Kevin say?
I don't know.
Oh my God, well, he's missing. Well, he's missing one week,
we
and we've already forgotten about
him. Archive these someplace, like our selections.
I'm
sorry, Kevin. Who?
Kevin said a blue.
He really said. Kevin, and I was like,
who? Who is this?
Man,
is this what happens whenever I'm gone? Yes. Jake, who?
I think Kevin said Oblivion. Yeah.
No, hey, I like Oblivion.
What did he say? Did he say Vanilla Sky?
I love Vanilla Sky.
I do love.
Did he say Top Gun?
No, he didn't say Top Gun. You know, he's never seen Top Gun. No, he doesn't like Top Gun.
He doesn't like Top Gun.
That's it. Yeah.
If anyone is listening to this podcast on the regular and wants to archive our blend picks, please do that for us.
Like, also, if you have the time,
yes,
get out more. Because you should have other things to do with your lives.
Exactly. I'm assuming that last week most of you went to go see Ant-Man and the Wasp, so we're going to dive into some spoiler talk because there's a few scenes that we didn't
We have to talk.
In depth. And so this is the point of the podcast where if you haven't seen Ant-Man yet, bail. And come back, and we'll talk about Paris Blend in a couple of minutes. But remind me again, you were at like 3.5 stars for Ant-Man, or
it was fine.
Right, but you have a lot of problems with the mid-credits.
It's not problems, and I would love for someone to write the ship and tell me that I'm wrong. So the mid-credit finale scene,
yes.
Shows them all on a rooftop, and they're jovial, and they're joking, and they're having a good time. Aren't we all so happy? And then he goes into the quantum realm because they need to get something that's going to help Ghost.
Ghost, yes.
And then...
quantum healing something.
Yes. And then he tries to talk to them, cut back to the rooftop, and they have turned to ash. Therefore, it is the snap from Infinity War.
Correct.
What I don't understand is, by that point, he was off of... house arrest.
With 3 years probation, where he could not interact with any tech.
It just...
I know.
Okay, obviously whatever happened in New York would be worldwide news.
Yes.
Whatever happened... They opened Wakanda, so whatever happened in Wakanda would be worldwide news.
Right.
It just seems weird that, like, these two massive superheroes would be just joking and laughing on a rooftop while this worldwide battle is happening at the same time.
I agree.
On the other side of the planet. That's why the timing doesn't work out. If it's happening at the same time, it just seems like, well, then are you really superheroes if you're just hanging out on a rooftop?
Well, Infinity War built in the fact that they do acknowledge that they don't call Scott because he's under house arrest.
Okay, but that's at that moment.
Yeah, so let's say that
moment Ant-Man and the Wasp takes place within 2 days, right?
Correct. So let's assume that that conversation with Black Widow and Captain America is happening on, like, day one of Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yes.
Right? And they're saying, oh, he's still under house arrest, he can't do anything.
Yeah.
And
at no point was it like, but it's cool because he only has 3 days left, so why don't we...
I mean, they could have said that, sure. The other thing is that they seem pretty intent on going back into the quantum realm, so maybe they just were like, we have to do this now and we can't go help them.
Yeah.
I think the timing of it is, it's okay because the Thanos stuff was happening so quickly But you're right. Like, if there's a huge attack in New York, they should have reacted. But so far, they have not been heroes who have moved out of San Francisco. You know, they're still just based there.
I just feel like, by definition of a superhero, Scott Lang is not the sort of person that would say, I'm not going to go help my friends, I'm not going to go save the world because I have probation.
But he's an ant. Like, how fast can he actually travel?
He can also...
He can travel as a man. And then get there and then shrink to an ant. I got here in like 14 minutes.
So do you think that it was, like, they just wanted to do it because they knew the dusting would be cool?
Yeah, they wrote that with and hoped that we wouldn't put the timeline together too much.
Because it plays
my audience went nuts.
Yeah, it plays great.
It plays great until you stop and go, wait a second, why wasn't he just in Wakanda?
Yeah.
There was also all this talk right after Infinity War was like, is Ant-Man and the Wasp going to...
Where does it take place?
Right. So if that mid-credit scene hadn't been added in at the time, they probably went, oh, we need to shoot
something. Yeah, we got to. Actually, we don't need to shoot anything. We just need to shoot an empty rooftop with some ash in it.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
It's a bit of an
awkward. I think they just needed it. I mean, Infinity War was a massive, massive movie. They needed to tie into it in some way, I think.
You couldn't just leave it alone.
Right.
But there's also something that's mentioned in that scene that I think is going to be really important that people have been speculating on so far at this point. Because Janet says to Scott, before he goes in, like, stay out of the time vortexes. If you fall into one of those, we basically can't get you out, right?
Okay.
It's really hard to get you out.
That went over my head.
There's two pieces of information that are out there now, and they're, like, set visit or set photo spoilery type things. One shows Scott Lang at the Battle of New York from the first Avengers movie. He's, like, next to Captain America in his old Captain America suit.
So, oh, they go back.
As in, he goes through the time vortexes, these time travel vortexes that are in the quantum realm, and goes back to pivotal moments, like, in the MCU.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, and that he's at the Battle of Manhattan, which is one of the first things that Thanos does to basically attack our planet. There's another piece of information that says Scott Lang's daughter, who they spent a lot of time in this movie setting up to, like, his connection to her and what she could be, that there's an actress they cast for Avengers 4 who's going to be Cassie as, like, an older teenager.
Ooh,
yeah.
I like that.
So that there could be time travel into the future, and that when Avengers 4 starts, we could have been, like, years into the heroes dealing with the repercussions of
the leftovers.
And that when he comes out of the quantum realm, because he's calling for everybody to help him, when he finally comes out of the quantum realm, like, a lot of time has passed.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if they're going to do
either
of those, but you guys like those theories.
Man, I really hope that that's the case, because if not, I'm going to be really disappointed in this movie.
Well, I really wish that Lando was a Canto Bight.
Well, you know, we can't all be happy, can we?
No. So, the next movie coming is Captain Marvel, and it's in March
of next
year. Yeah.
That's the next big movie
that we have to look forward to. Well, for Marvel.
Yeah.
This is good. At least we're spacing these out.
You said
get Captain Marvel and Infinity War, Avengers 4 within, like, a month of each other.
Yeah, and that's just a lot.
Yeah. Well, they're going to get to a point where there are 4 Marvel movies a year.
And you said that Star Wars wanted to get to the point, and now I think we've got a massive setback, but they wanted multiple Star Wars movies in a year.
The argument for why they kept Solo in May is because they knew they could open a Star Wars movie in December, and it would do well.
Yeah.
They wanted to see if they could do it in May also, and if it would compete, and then they'd get to a point where they had May and December every single year. And now, since Solo didn't do well, I think they're back to the drawing board on that. But Marvel just released another date for... Here we are talking about 2021.
Wow.
Where
those years not that far away.
It's not, and it'll be here before you know it. And they do have to plan long term for it, because they don't do DC spaghetti against the wall, like you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
They legitimately plan out their slate. But the 2021 date, the new one, it's February, which people started to think it was like Black Panther 2, because that could fall into that realm. Is putting them in a position where they could by 2021.
I'm sorry, Black Panther is dead, sir.
See?
Oh,
yes.
Spoiler alert.
How dare you?
Wow.
I mean, I already ruined Lost. Might as well ruin Black Panther.
Yeah. That was probably the most shocking.
Oh,
yeah.
People were in my theater were so mad.
Yeah.
I saw it at a midnight screening. Like, well, they were sad about Spider-Man. Sorry, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
But when Black Panther died, like, people just wouldn't stop yelling at the screen for the rest of the movie. It's like, hey, there's still 10 minutes left here, people.
Well, I thought it was Okoye. Like, I thought she was going to go. You know, like, he's saying to her, get up. This is not how we die.
Yeah.
And then he fades.
Yeah.
And I was like, you guys are not messing around.
Yeah.
This is a serious thing.
But that's also when you know, okay, clearly none of these people are going to die.
Because, well, like, who are the ones that they left? The ones that have the biggest chance of dying. Thor, Iron Man.
Yeah.
Well, all the originals.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So it's kind of interesting that, like, the originals were left.
Yeah.
And if they do go back to the Battle of Manhattan from the first Avengers, then you have a parallel of they're still existing and the old ones are still there. And
yeah.
And everybody who did disappear, I think, are basically important to Phase 4.
Yeah.
Spider-Man definitely true. Has a sequel. The Guardians basically all disappear.
Yeah.
They have another movie coming.
You know, my dad was recently in town, and he had never seen Homecoming. And so he wanted to watch it, and I watched it with him. And there's that great scene in Homecoming where Tony Stark says, like, if you die, that's on me.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's the part of Avengers 4 I can't wait to see, is Tony just... He is going to be haunted by the fact that Peter Parker is dead.
Right.
And I mean, I think we're going to get a great scene where he has to go tell Aunt May that Peter's dead and it's my fault.
Oh, and you know what? That's, yes. Oh, God.
That's going to be great.
That will be great.
Right?
To see them play.
And I think that's why they put that scene in Homecoming, to set up. I think we were seeing a spoiler without knowing it.
Wow. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I like that. I popped on Ragnarok because it finally came onto Netflix. Yeah. And there's a line in that. And now we're, like, overanalyzing all this stuff.
Well, yeah.
What it could mean.
Yeah.
But the fire demon in the opening scene where Thor is on the chain and he's spinning around, when he breaks out of that and the demon says to him, "You've made a big mistake," and he goes, "I often make mistakes. It often turns out well."
It turns out, yeah.
And I thought, oh, maybe because when he hits Thanos in the chest.
Oh, interesting.
Thanos is like, "You should have aimed for the head."
Yeah, you should have aimed for the head.
And here's Thor saying, "I make mistakes all the time." It tends to work out. So.
That's interesting.
Or maybe we're overanalyzing everything. Just
you mean a 90-minute long movie podcast could be overanalyzing films?
Fair enough. But I thought this was a pretty good palate cleanser after Infinity War.
It was fine.
It's fine.
It's fine.
I guess I thought it would do better at the box office.
The tone of Infinity War was pretty dark. And Ant-Man at least lifts your spirits up.
It's funny.
But I feel like the tone of Infinity War wasn't known until you saw Infinity War.
Yes.
Ant-Man is very much a, like, hey, we promise it'll make you happy. Like, just even the trailers, it's bright and it's colorful, and the marketing is, like, you know, Infinity War, I'm obviously, like, they can't put that ending in the advertising, so we didn't know what we were getting into, unless you read the comic books and you sort of knew the snap thing was coming, but...
It's funny. I like Michelle Pfeiffer a lot. I'm glad she's on board. I like
Evangeline. For all 38 seconds of that, she's...
With that wig.
Yeah.
That was that wig. That was out of control.
that was a heck of a wig.
Yeah. But Paul Rudd, I think Paul Rudd's great in that role. We're going to do hashtag Paris Blend.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about the movie that we think most... signifies this beautiful city that we're sitting in for the Mission Impossible world premiere. And I'm going to let you guys know.
Chris
has a pick. Yes.
It's the movie that best signifies the city or the best movie that takes place in the city?
Either. I said the parameters are pretty vague.
Oh, God, now I don't know, Sean.
But if you made your pick, stand
by. I made my...
I think maybe it's the movie that when you think of
Paris,
you go, oh yeah, that movie's the first one that comes in.
Okay.
Mind.
If you say something that doesn't remind us of Paris, I mean, you lost the game.
People are going to hate my pick, I think.
I'm going to hate your pick. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be really mad.
It's tough because I think of Paris has had so many movies set in it compared to any other city.
Right. My pick is Forrest Gump.
Because
he lives on planet Earth, and Paris is...
Does he ever go to Paris? That's a shitty pick.
Blah,
blah. All right, Gabe, can we guess? Are we able to guess? Do we have the same picks? We can guess. All right, I'm first.
Yeah.
So you guys get to pick what you think. And Kevin is playing along.
Kevin made a pick!
Kevin, who is on a cruise...
Tomless cruise?
He was on a Tomless cruise.
Does he have cruise control? Speed 2? Cruise control?
I think we can all guess what Kevin's pick is.
I think Kevin picked Inception.
Kevin definitely picked Inception. Okay, I go first. You guys get to pick.
I think you picked Hugo.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, I think that...
I'm gonna assume that that's no then.
I think a really good pick would be Casablanca.
Ooh, it's a great pick.
I changed Kevin's pick. I think Kevin picked Hugo.
You might have picked Hugo.
I think Kevin picked Hugo.
I think he picked Inception.
I think he picked
I'm switching. I think he picked Hugo.
I picked Ratatouille.
Wow!
I picked Ratatouille. And I mean, it was like the easiest pick... but the more I thought about it, like, that's what it is. Like, this city to me, and especially spending time here, is so much about food and the enjoyment of food and the pleasure of coming to this city and creativity and chasing a dream.
Yeah.
And yes, it's a Pixar movie, but it's one of the best Pixar
movies.
That
means nothing. It means everything.
It's Brad Bird.
That's a great pick.
And it's like, it shows, it's a hyper-stylized version of Paris. It's the kind that you sort of imagine in the 30s and 40s of what it looks like. It's the bistro chairs and it's... But when I watch that movie,
Laurence Olivier is the food critic.
No, it's not.
Peter O'Toole.
Peter O'Toole.
Oh yeah.
Peter O'Toole. as Anton Ego. Ego, the film critic with the ego, which I love. But like the bistros, the way that the bistro is illustrated, the way the kitchen is illustrated, it just instantly makes me want to eat and drink wine. Like
we're which doing. We are doing.
Which we are doing.
You need a refill, sir.
To me, it is, we're out. We have to order some more. To me, it is just a quintessential Paris movie. And I think it also speaks to a lot of the reasons why people come to this city to visit and some of the things that they like to do while they're here. So that is my pick. And Chris is next, and we get to guess.
Silence.
I'm going to say Midnight in Paris.
I know he hates that movie. I really did not enjoy that. I'm going to go... I might also go Ratatouille.
I mean, it's tough, because there's so many great
movies. Oh, no, you just said Casablanca, so now I feel like I'm going to go Casablanca.
I mean, that's great, too. But there's so many great movies set here. And it's interesting, because the movie I picked isn't one that defines Paris, but there's so much great Paris stuff in it, and it's Inception. And them sitting on the bistro chairs like you were just talking about and watching the city fold in. I was very close to picking the John Travolta film From Paris with Love. I'm just joking. That movie is really But it's... we actually went out of our way the day that we got here, and we took an Uber to the Inception Cafe.
Okay.
The cafe where Ellen Page and Leonardo DiCaprio are in their dream, you know, talking, or he's giving her lesson about, like, things in dreams feel real when you're there.
Right.
And when you're actually at this cafe, it doesn't look anything like it does in the movie.
But you did the side by side, and I thought it looked close.
I think you said that because it's different chairs.
It's dressed differently. Our idea was we were going to go there, and we were going to eat at the Inception Cafe. It's called Il Russo, if you ever are in Paris. And it's closed. Paris does this thing where, like, breakfast is from this time, lunch is from this time, and dinner's from this time. And they close down in between.
Right.
So we were there at, like, 4 o'clock, and... I guess lunch only went till 3. Dinner didn't start till 5 or 6 or whatever. So it was just empty. So we just sat in these chairs, took a whole bunch of photos. And
so it's like a corner. It's a corner
restaurant. Yeah, and it's in a very quiet part of town.
Okay. Also, Parisians, they all lunch. Yes. If you go out at lunchtime in this city...
Long lunches.
Everyone's
out. Lots of alcohol. Lots of wine.
Oh my gosh, everyone is out enjoying the food.
Like,
so.
They were like, when we had breakfast today, they're like, what do you mean you... Yeah. Or lunch today. They're like, what do you mean you don't want wine?
Yeah. Well, yeah, we're like, we have to work. You're like, it makes work better.
Yeah. What are you talking about?
I have to talk to Tom Cruise. Yes. Make Tom Cruise better.
I also almost picked Taken because I think that Taken has some great Paris stuff.
Actually, one of our listeners said that on Twitter, and I never thought about it until they said it. And I was like, actually, that's a really good suggestion.
Yeah. And by the way, was Eurotrip, did they have anything in Paris? Because I loved that movie.
Yes.
They take the channel at some point.
I have such an affinity for...
Excuse me.
This is going to date me, but I love European Vacation, the sequel to...
Oh, I thought you were going to say you did the Eurotrip junket.
No. I love European Vacation, and there's a gag where Clark Griswold's teenage son, they make the whole family wear berets with their names on them. And he's on the Eiffel Tower, and these cute girls are next to him, and they're laughing, like giggling. And he's like, oh, it must be because I look really good. And then his name, it says Rusty across the beret. They're like, Rusty? And he's like, oh, I hate this. He's like, Dad, can I just get rid of the beret? And he's like, yeah, that's fine. You can take it. So he takes it off his head and he throws it. And this woman had a dog in her arms. And she, like, the dog scrambles out of her arms and jumps off the Eiffel Tower. And there's a bad bit where the dog's flying through the air and catches the beret like a frisbee and it's going down. Really horrible. And I thought about that at least 2 or 3 times during today when I should have been focusing on Tom Cruise. I was like, that's what Rusty threw his beret off.
What he's not telling you is that the one question Sean got with Tom Cruise was, did you ever see that scene in European Vacation?
I love that scene. He was like, I do.
Yeah. I do. It was great. Aren't we best friends?
Yes, we are. Yeah. We hugged. And then I didn't ask for a picture. Jake is next, and we get to guess. And I'll let Chris guess first.
I think that you can't hate Midnight in Paris as much as I dislike it. that can't actually be my guess, but it will be my guess.
You're going to guess that? I'm going to guess Hugo.
So, okay, here's what's interesting. And I, you know, since the parameters were so loose, there wasn't any rules about this one.
Why
would
I hate your pick?
On the plane on the way over, my pick was Hugo.
Okay.
And I landed.
You love that movie.
I love that movie. I love that. I have a signed poster framed on my wall.
Right.
And then I started driving around the city, and every You know what's funny is, and this is a joke, Chris and I, every corner cafe I see, I'm like, that's the one from Inception. And Chris is like, yeah, that's not the one from Inception. Because they all look the same.
They do.
And every street corner I turn, I'm like, that's the street that folds up. He's like, yeah, that's not the street that folds
up. Wait, isn't there a bridge that's important?
There's a bridge. And then we walk by, I'm like, that's the bridge that they walk. He's like, that's not the bridge they walk across. So my point being that I thought it was Hugo and I landed and my mind hasn't been able to escape Inception.
Okay.
So because of that, I feel like I have to go Inception because that's where I keep going. That's where, and you know, I'm not saying it's a better film than Hugo or something like Casablanca, but like that's whenever I'm walking around, I can't help but like I get excited thinking, whether I'm actually there or not, that I'm at the corner cafe where they're sitting.
Right.
And that's to me like the if there are loose parameters for this one, those are the parameters I'm making for myself. When I'm walking around and I think that I'm on the set of a scene of a movie, what's the movie that gets me most excited to be on the set of?
Yeah.
And it's Inception.
Right.
And I understand that like, you know, it's a 2.5 hour movie and it's not a massive chunk of the movie that takes place in Paris, but it's such a crucial chunk.
Yeah, it's significant.
And
yeah.
It's crucial in that Ellen Page is us, and it's almost as if DiCaprio is explaining to us how what the rules of Inception are.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, that visual of Paris folding over. And that's where he sort of explained the rules of like, you know, that bridge scene was significant. What was like the rule that he...
Don't ask me.
It was the mirror. Remember? It was
And
you couldn't look at the people in your dream because then they would figure out.
Yeah, exactly. And don't put people in your dream that you know because then you start confusing.
And then Leo's ex-wife or wife was in...
So that's it.
But does the top fall? Nolan.
So, I'm sure I'm going to fly home tomorrow and wake up in the middle of the night and think, why didn't I choose you? And look at the poster haunting on my wall, and Scorsese's going to go,
well,
I signed this poster, why didn't you pick
it? Give Hugo some love, because it is such a
fact that we're all, like, picking Hugo for each other.
Yeah.
Exactly. Says, and honestly, like I said, Hugo's my pick on the way over.
And I do think it's not a... Hugo's a great movie. I think The Tourist is not a good movie. But The Tourist really defines what it's like to be a tourist here in Paris.
Very true.
Like, I was walking along the Seine last night, and I had some wine there, and I was like, oh, this is the Johnny Depp life right here.
Yeah, yeah.
And it might not be a good movie, but it is a great representation of what it's like to come here for a week.
Also, I want to refute the idea that Parisians are not nice. We have run into so many incredible people here.
Incredibly, and also incredibly patient.
Yes.
People. Because we are the people in this country, we are not speaking their native language.
Right.
We're stumbling around asking for directions.
Right.
And I have found nothing but kind people here pointing in the right direction,
right.
Trying to speak which I can't speak a second language, and I'm asking them to do something I can't do whenever I need them to speak what is not their native language.
It is interesting how they approach us and immediately speak English. It's like we have American just written on our forehead.
I know Michelle and I were talking about that too.
Yeah.
Your
red Make America Great Again hat probably
I am Canadian.
That's right. Oh, I forgot you are Canadian.
Thank you very
but
much.
But it's true. How do they know?
Tell me more about
how
that.
How do they come over to us
Sorry
and they're just like,
that.
Hi, how are you?
Hi.
And I'm like, no, can't say bonjour.
Would you like a cheeseburger?
Keep the mystique going. Maybe I'm local.
Yeah.
Growing up in Canada, I took high school French, so I know like 18 words of French.
No, he says that, and he got us to the Eiffel Tower based on his French this morning.
Well, I've seen like at least two people on this trip who've been impressed by your French.
What?
Yes.
And one of them was your best friend, Tom Cruise.
And then they'll go, oh, I don't know.
I'm sorry, what was that?
I don't know. I make noises that sound
like
it sounded really good, actually.
I can only string like three or four words together.
Right.
But, it seems to work.
It's French-Canadian, though. Isn't that different?
It is. Québécois français. Where it's like,
oh my god,
just because.
And here's the thing, he could be making it up and we'd never know.
It's getting hot in this room, isn't it?
Yeah. Où est la toilette? Where's the toilet?
A very important phrase to know.
Yeah.
Before I do the audience picks, Kevin's pick.
I'm very excited.
Inception.
Yeah, I say Hugo. I think it's Hugo.
He loves Nolan so much.
He loved it.
And also to reinforce once again, Kevin is ironically on a cruise.
Let
me explain this joke.
Yes.
He's on a cruise.
Yes.
And we interviewed a guy.
Yes.
Named Cruz.
Oh, I don't get it.
Okay, so he's on a. Okay. First one.
Wait, what are we guessing?
I think it's Hugo.
What did you guess?
I think it's Hugo.
I think mine was Ratatouille.
What
am I guessing? Kevin's is?
Mm-hmm.
No, I think Kevin said, oh god, I'm so torn between.
I think it's Hugo.
The two.
He loves Hugo.
I think
that was his number
say,
one that year. So is Inception.
I have to say,
Inception.
I'm going to say Inception.
I say Hugo.
And here's Kevin.
Hey, Sean, Jake, Gabe, miss you guys so much. Sean, Jake, I hope you guys are having the best time in Paris. I know you guys are with Tom Cruise. I am literally on a cruise. It's interesting. I'm jealous because I miss you guys and I want to be in Paris with you guys for Mission Impossible Fallout. But I'm also having a great time here with my wife, Lauren. Obviously, she's right here as well. Say hi.
Hello.
And since we are on vacation together, I'm going to allow her to join in on my Paris blend pick as well. I was just telling her which one I was going to pick, and she was like, well, I like this one. So I thought it'd be funny if she just gave hers real quick. I won't keep this long, but I hope you guys are having the best time. I know by this point, I think you guys will have seen Mission Impossible Fallout, which I'm so jealous about. Let me know on text chain, thumbs up or thumbs down. I'm sure it's going to be thumbs up. It looks awesome. And Chris McQuarrie is... always delivers. So, all right, my Paris blend is actually going to be a repeat pick from an earlier blend we did. I'm going to go with Hugo, Martin Scorsese's Hugo, set in Paris. Beautiful film. And the opening shot into the train station is absolutely incredible. I'm not sure specifically if this is designed around the Paris section of it being the best or the best movie set in Paris. I'm just going with best movie set in Paris. So Hugo, I think it's Scorsese's best film. And I know we had a discussion about that when Zach Penn was on the podcast about, going through our Scorsese blend picks, and, we had Goodfellas in there. So many classics, Raging Bull, Taxi Driver. I just thought this film was so different, and just his love letter to cinema. And I loved every aspect of it being a love letter to movie making, and then seeing the Ben Kingsley storyline play out and seeing him making these older films. So that's my particular favorite film set in Paris. So hashtag Paris blend, Hugo. And now Lauren's going to give hers.
I have to go with Moulin Rouge.
Oh, good one! Good one!
No one thought that.
Wow, yeah. that didn't even enter into my. And then Rin and I are going in like 2 months.
That's a great pick. It has good. A French title. Oh my gosh! It's God. Such a fun movie.
So, which one of us is Lauren going to be replacing?
I write the intros. I bring a skill set.
She can replace me.
Oh, God, I've got nothing. Wait, I want to bring nothing to this.
Now let's hear Lauren's explanation.
Good pick, Lauren.
It's a great pick, Lauren.
Moulin Rouge with Ewan McGregor and Nicole Kidman, directed by Baz Luhrmann. I grew up on that movie. The first time I saw it was in middle school. I was absolutely blown away by it. It's a gorgeous musical. It's one of the best love stories I've ever seen in a movie. It's probably my favorite Nicole Kidman movie. She's just so great in the film. The cinematography is gorgeous. The music, obviously. And obviously, it's set in Paris, which just looks beautiful. So I've seen the movie probably, 50, 60 times, maybe more. So it's just a personal favorite of mine. I had Moulin Rouge posters all over my wall when I was growing up and in college as well. So Moulin Rouge by Baz Luhrmann.
All right, guys. Well, we're going to get back to vacation. And Sean and Jake, if you guys don't mind, I've told you this off air, but I wanted to put it on record. You need to, when you get your question in with Tom Cruise, I reportedly heard that he did the Halo jump 106 times. Just ask him when he was up there if he ever worried for a minute that he might fall out. Get it? Yeah, that's the title of the movie. All right, I'll see you guys. I love you guys very much. I miss you guys. And the guest host this week, I believe, is Chris Van Vliet. So if it's Chris, I love you as well, sir. I miss you guys. Friendship for life. And I'm literally on a friendship right now. Yeah, you can find me at On A Tom Cruise is my Twitter handle for this week. And Dunkirk!
That is the best punchline on this podcast that we have ever had.
Oh, wow.
That's Kevin McCarthy.
Well done, Kevin McCarthy.
Raises the bar.
He is like Meryl Streep in Mamma Mia 2. Like, he's not in it much, but my God, when he's in it.
He delivers. That was great. Really, really funny. All right, so the audience pick was Ratatouille. That one,
yeah.
With a lot of love for
I feel like
Inception
my Parisian enough.
And Hugo. No, a lot of love for Inception.
Yeah.
And Hugo.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah, everybody played along.
Yeah.
But and Michelle just suggested too.
Yeah, Les Mis.
We totally miss Les Mis, yeah. Which should.
Can
come.
You
oh,
hear
yeah.
the people sing?
Yeah.
We should have sang this.
No.
Did you?
Yeah, really?
Wow.
Okay, I always forget. What is his prisoner number? 24. 301.
Hey, Sinzi, yeah.
Yeah, I'm 204. That's not right. I know it's not 204.
Sean, did you suggest Midnight in Paris because you and enjoyed this film?
No, I don't. I'm not a Woody Allen fan.
Neither am I. We just said, yeah, neither am I.
I'm not. But I do understand that for all of the stories that he tells about New York City, I think he tried his best to make a Paris story and the history of Paris. No, I would never
pick it. I just want to say that my biggest problem with Midnight in Paris is that when Owen Wilson gets into the taxi, he is always transported back to the same time. Every single time, he's always in the same era, right? He's in the era with Hemingway and everyone else. Then the investigator that is following him, the spy that's following him, gets into a taxi, the same place, at the same time at night, and somehow ends up with Marie Antoinette, like in a completely different era, 200 years before.
Maybe it's based on the person?
I'm just thinking it's stupid.
It's a hack.
I think you thought more about that moment than Woody Allen ever did.
Yeah, I think so too.
I mean, he's got other things.
I left the movie going, that made no sense.
He's preoccupied.
Yes.
And I was bored by the 10-minute intro with...
That's every Woody Allen movie.
Is Marion Cotillard in that? Because I like her.
Fassbender's
in it. Oh, she's in Inception.
Yeah,
that's what I'm thinking about. Fassbender's in Midnight in Paris.
Yeah, isn't he?
Yeah, he's.
I thought it was Hemingway.
No, Corey Stahl is Hemingway.
He's in it.
You're thinking of Magneto, and this is X-Men First Class.
Are we not talking about that?
we're not talking about that.
I'm confused.
Next week, your homework was suggested by someone else who co-hosted, by Juan, and he said, "With Ant-Man and the Wasp out, it's time to do hashtag Pfeiffer Blend."
Ooh.
Or Michelle Pfeiffer's
I'm nervous because Juan has like an encyclopedic knowledge of Pfeiffer, and I do not.
And your pick will be wrong.
I gotta do some homework.
You gotta do some homework. And so does everybody at home. Yeah. So let us know your pick via email at realblend@cinemablend.com or use hashtag Pfeifferblend, and you're all gonna spell it wrong. So I'm gonna give it to you once.
Pfeiffer.
Wait, say it again.
Pfeiffer.
No H.
H. P F.
H. P F.
Oh, I thought it was B-I. Like phone.
When I meant
that crazy?
You're all going to spell it wrong. I didn't mean to start with you.
P-F.
No, we're going to get it right.
I.
No. P-F. Shoot. You're going to do someone else. Michelle Blend.
No one is going to give us the hashtag. See, this is why Hank's Blend worked out so well.
It did work out really well. Where can listeners... Well, first off, let's thank Chris Van Vliet.
Hey!
Third chair, Chris.
Thank you.
Outstanding. You are... It's like having a regular to the podcast.
I was glad that you took a Chris Van seat with us.
Oh, wow. It was really Chris Van Neat being...
All right, Sean, give us one.
I don't know. We're not under pressure. I've had too much wine. Where can listeners find you, Chris? Give us all your socials.
So, like Michelle Pfeiffer, I have a hard to spell last name.
Yes.
So it's Chris, Chris, Vanvliet.
Very nice. Instagram. Because in Canada, one last name is not enough.
Sure. Yeah.
Why not?
Two tells me more about you.
And go to his
Instagram,
YouTube.
Twitter. Yes. Please go to my YouTube page, especially if you like wrestling. And I'm sure there's a lot of WWE fans out there as well.
Yeah, but sell that just for a second. Like, your wrestling content is really good. And
not just
a big
really
fan.
Good, incredibly popular.
I just think it's very entertaining.
Yeah.
And I don't follow wrestling at all, but your interviews are super entertaining.
Yeah, I've been really fortunate to get some really great wrestling interviews. And these are long-form interviews. I'm getting 20, 30 minutes with... In the last month, wrestling fans will know I've had Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan.
Woo!
Woo! I'm wearing a shirt that says, woo!
Woo!
Eric Bischoff, Simon Gotch, Chris Jericho, Alberto Del Rio, Caitlin, who's just now officially returned to the WWE. You guys are looking at me like, who are all these people? Wrestling fans will be like, oh, that's really awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
are you seeking them out, or they come to you?
No, I'm going way out of my way to make these interviews happen. Gotcha. I made an idea at the start of the year that I was going to like really make my YouTube channel a thing.
Right.
And January 1st, I said I wanted to do 40 wrestling interviews this year. I want to do 52, one a week, but that seemed like a lot. So like I drove 3.5 hours from Miami, where I live, to Orlando to interview Chris Jericho.
Mm.
So I've been going out of my way to make this happen. It was a 7-hour round-trip drive.
But then they turn around and get how many views? Like hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, and the Chris Jericho interview is like 320,000 views.
Did he die?
No. No, Chris Jericho's still alive.
Is
yeah,
these
don't
wrestlers
worry.
Die. They all,
yes,
a lot,
a
of,
lot
them
of them die.
Yeah,
yes.
Too many of them. Yeah. It's sad. Jake, where can people find you?
If you just Google Tom Cruise, I'm probably going to be standing next to him in any photo that you find.
Tom Cruise's best friend.
Yeah.
And somehow Tom Cruise is taller than you in these photos.
And I'm Sean _ O'Connell. We are all at Real Blend. We're going to play Pfeiffer Blend next week if anybody can spell it. Drop us a review on iTunes.
F I-Y-F-R.
There's a Z in there.
You're way off on that one. If you leave us a review, we will read it at the top of next week's show. We will be back talking about Skyscraper. Are we going to go see Skyscraper before we...
I saw it when it was called Die Hard.
No, I...
Oh, wow.
And we're going to preview Comic-Con. So we will be back then. And thank you all for tuning in to our very special set in Paris, Mission Impossible, Junket, Best Friends with Tom Cruise episode. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Dunkirk!
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.